You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifice. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and a man who's having chronic internet problems is Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Yeah.
When you joined, you looked furious, and the screen froze with your face in a very furious expression, which I think summed up the issue quite nicely. So it's possible we might lose you at some point during this, but we'll just carry on regardless, I guess. And then you, being the editor, will have to patch it all together later. Yeah. Lucky you.
Woo!
Happy Easter, Nathan. Yesterday, in addition to Easter, was Trans Day of Visibility, and we wanted to highlight once again that our Discord is a space where trans and non-binary people can come and talk about Spurs free from transphobia. So if you are trans or non-binary and you fancy that, like the sound of that, get in touch via Twitter or podcast at The Extra Inch. And we will arrange access for you, and you can join the community, which is great. I also want to give a shout out to Bernard McGinley, who is always the first to like our Facebook post. I feel like Bernard must have some sort of notification set up because he's always there, always liking it. And it's appreciated. Thank you, Bernard. And finally, in terms of notices... we have this thing on Spotify where it automatically pumps out a question for Spotify listeners every week. I think it's just like, did you enjoy this podcast? Or, oh, here it is. What did you think about this episode is the generic question that it asks. And I just haven't got around to turning it off. So it's on there. This week we had two interesting replies, I thought. Firstly, is it Coloured Indigo, I think, says, amazing episode, especially where the American tells us Americans are okay to then go on and recommend places where you avoid many people, which I thought was great. And then Little Messiah said, love the pod, but for fuck's sake, you guys didn't even pronounce Kavara right. You're saying Kavara. Can British people really not pronounce Kava as only one syllable?
No, absolutely not. No, I cannot.
And I wanted to defend myself on this because, believe it or not, prior to that episode where I attempted to pronounce the unpronounceable, I had done some research by Googling his name, I won't say it, and pronunciation, and then listened to it several times to try and pronounce it correctly. And here's what the internet told me.
It sounds like Hvicha, Hvicha, Kvaratshelia, Kvaratshelia.
Yeah, there's an A in there, I reckon.
There's an A in there. I was trying my best. I really tried, really, really hard. It's a hard name. Yeah, but apologies. It must really grate when we're pronouncing sounds from your native language badly.
Sorry.
Sorry for that. We had loads of feedback on the discussion about mental health that we had last week. People were very, very supportive of the fact that we even had the conversation. And I think maybe it's something we should talk about more often, frankly, as sort of three guys. Men don't talk about mental health enough. We know that. And there's an opportunity for us to do so. So perhaps we'll feed in more of that as time goes on. Dana Cunningham said, I just finished listening to the most recent pod and your discussion on mental health. I really appreciate you all being so supportive. I found a great resource for guided meditations on YouTube. It's called The Honest Guys, and they have hundreds of meditations of varying lengths and topics. I found them incredibly helpful. So thank you for that, Dana. That's fantastic. We had loads of other emails. Thanks to Dave and Nick C in particular. And Daniel Waite recommended a book called And How Does That Make You Feel? By Joshua Fletcher, and it's written from a therapist's perspective with case studies and Joshua's internal monologue. And I've ordered that book for my holiday reading, so I will be sure to mention that again in the future.
There's there's an Arsenal fan who listens to this podcast who I feel like I should not name and protect their identity, but they listen to every episode of this podcast, and they're also they're a therapist of some variety, and they also got in touch. A couple of people got in touch actually with some some feedback and some advice and stuff, which I've appreciated.
Very nice.
Also, lovely. on the meditation thing, if you're an ex-sub, the next Run, Push, Pull podcast will be on learning how to breathe, because even though we're all alive, we're all breathing incorrectly. So that the next one will be on meditating and learning how to breathe. It's really difficult. If you've ever tried to breathe, it's really hard to give, even though it's something we do every single day. So the whole way we breathe from your body and everything else. So that will be the next RPP.
Nice. Sounds good. One of our ex-subs, Nick, has started a podcast called Disagree to Disagree, and it's gone down really well, but in small circles. And so I thought we'd give it a little shout out in the hope that more people would cotton on and listen. It's basically two English teachers trying to convince one another about films and poetry. It sounds very, very gentle and enjoyable. I haven't listened myself yet, but I intend to. So support Nick and listen to Disagree to Disagree. Finally, we talk about the Luton match. So the starting 11, I guess it was kind of expected, but I did think Van de Ven would be back in the team, Bardi, and I was a bit disappointed when he wasn't.
I'm quite happy to protect him. I didn't think against Luton, even though they scored first, I didn't think against Luton there would be much of a threat that we needed to worry about him. So I was kind of happy to see his big old strapping hammies get another a week rest. Because I West Ham will need him for sure. Antonio speeding on Bowen and those guys. Whereas Luton, they've got that giant Morris, and yeah, they're just really big people, but just not that quick.
Yeah, and the thing is, with if it is a hamstring thing, then there's no point taking chances, really. It's too risky. He's too important a piece of the jigsaw, especially for the tricky running we've got coming up.
And that's a hell of a hamstring.
How do you feel about the game more generally?
I was quite worried about Dragusin on the left in this game. I was really hoping that we would see the centre-back switched, given that, Van de Ven can't play all of these games, and we shouldn't be rushing him back from another hamstring injury, because it's just an issue that's going to compound, right? But it means that essentially Dragusin's got to play at some point, or Windy, you would argue Ben Davies could play in his place. I was definitely worried coming into this one with Dragusin on the left side of centre back.
Do we talk about Dragusin now? How did you think it played out?
Better than I thought it would. It seemed like both the in training we had worked on both him playing to his left, but also Spurs making it easier for him to play to his left. So Udogie coming deeper and wider, Maddison coming deeper and wider to offer that pass and open it up for him. And so it was better, but definitely still we were quite heavily biased towards our right-hand side. Definitely still he played it back to his right when he could have turned. It's definitely a problem, although it's less of a problem than it was in his first game. Fair enough. Maybe things will continue to improve there. I still think that there's a fairly low ceiling on how good he can be at passing to his left, essentially. That worries me a little. Makes me think we definitely need a left centre-back in the summer. And I'd be interested to see him on the right and see how he does there. He did also show us some really nice carries up the left flank, though. So that's nice. Sprinkle more of those in.
Yeah, Joel Hooton mentions that. He says, after a couple of games, I'd love to hear a breakdown of Dragusin. What areas does he need to improve and what unique attributes does he bring? Great to see him running forward, but it seems like there's a lack of confidence in him from the rest of the team. Buddy, what have you made of him so far?
I think it's been an okay start. It's relatively promising. There is a massive drop-off with Van de Ven, but that's kind of expected. So I'm relatively up on Dragusin. I did enjoy his carries. He's like the kind of guy, he's like Doku, really good with the ball running forwards, but he can't pass or shoot or do anything. So I do enjoy his little expeditions up the field. Maybe he should just run, like carry the ball, run the ball to Bissouma and then just run straight back instead of passing it. He's a lot of fun. He's a backup centre back. He needs to improve. He's got time on his side. So it's okay. I'm not going to murder him now. It's still plenty of time.
Yeah, I think he's a perfectly passable player. I think he's a good defender. I think he's good in the air. He seems to read the game relatively well. He's nice and aggressive. He's physically dominant. He carries well, as we saw. I mean, he carries once, it was like, oh yeah, I can do this. And he carried again and again and looked like he meant business with that. The thing is, and again, two games in, young player, new league, there's all the caveats in the world. I'm surprised we signed someone with this profile, to be honest. I think he is heavily weighted towards the good stopper, not good in possession. And if anything, I think given the style of football we play, we should be signing the opposite. The maybe not a good natural defender, but really superior on the ball. And I think it makes things tricky because I think Nathan said this before. I don't think you can really get away very easily with Dragušin and Van de Ven playing together because there's nowhere near enough creativity there. We don't like Dragušin so much on the left. It clearly isn't a comfortable position for him. Maybe it'll improve. So we have to sign a left sider who's a brilliant ball player. That's kind of where this has led us towards. And yeah, I guess I'm just surprised by the profile selection there and the weighting. I do believe he can improve and will improve. I think Ange will improve him, but it's the little details in the touch and passing for me that are lacking with Dragušin. And sometimes you're kind of stuck with that by the age he is. And I wonder how much he can improve. Clearly he's better than Davinson Sanchez in the ball. Obviously. Is he better than Eric Dier? I don't think so. I don't think he's an improvement on Eric Dier at all. Significant drop-off. Defensively, he's better than Dier. But in possession, I prefer Dier to Dragušin, personally.
I think if you're going to... So I think what we have here is we have a defender who can play Ange-style defence but can't play Ange-style attack. And I think that's more important, which is why we saw Emerson play in front of Dier when Dier was still at the club.
Mm.
Because Emerson can play Ange-style defence even though he's not as good as Dier on the ball. So I think right now the most important thing is being able to defend high up the pitch, run down the ball, win duels, and then we can see what happens with on the ball stuff. At the end, Dragušin he's not an Ndombele type of money. There's not a lot of money there. There's still a lot of value in him. His value remains high. So there is a decent sell on fee if it doesn't work. But I think we needed him because he's a miles better defender than Davies and Royale and Dier and Davinson. So he's an upgrade in that sense.
Yeah, I think I can get on board with that. I can get on board with the idea that this is a potential stopgap, like a solid defender who will come in and do a good job defensively, maybe won't add much on the ball, but maybe he will. Maybe there's an upside. Maybe there's some coaching that can polish him around the edges and he becomes much better and much more comfortable in possession. Yeah, I think that is something, that is an analysis that I can get on board with. I'd love to know the thinking behind the signing is what I'm getting at.
I think the thinking behind the signing is not going into this back end of the season with all the fullbacks as centre-back. That's what I think is the decision was made there.
Yeah, I'm just a little curious because I think that given the quality of our signings over the, I don't know what period of time we're talking about, since the summer, I guess, really. There's things I've been critical of. There's like clearly Solomon was not a data signing, but was a club signing. And then obviously with Johnson, who, by the way, obviously we're going to talk about and heap lots of praise on today, but a signing that we're critical of for reasons that are sort of beyond actually the scouting and more the situation that we are in due to other factors. Our scouting has been really quite impressive and clearly data led. So I'm curious about what the data said about Dragušin's passing, because my data was full of red flags.
And I think he doesn't pass the eye test with passing and touch. The ball gets caught under his feet. He's a bit sloppy. Some of the passes will be recorded as accurate passes, but they were kind of going behind their man, or they weren't weighted very nicely for the receiving player to then take a positive touch forward. And that's what I mean by the final details. Like this stuff, when you get to the level we're at, pushing for the Champions League, it's critical. It's critical stuff. This really matters, especially in a player playing a really important role in build up. But like Bardi says, like maybe there wasn't much on the market that we felt we can get in for the right price point, right age, and they prioritised the defensive side and he's a clearly competent defender.
Yeah, and I think Buddy's already made the point about not having fullbacks, but we had that run of games where we played Davies and or Royale at centre-back, right? And we can make comments about them as individuals and mistakes they did or didn't make and even limitations on the ball. But in that run of games, there was a tendency to drop off at the end of games. And I put that down to fatigue at the time. And the return of Van de Ven coincided with that suddenly not being a factor at all, and in fact as having a series of comeback wins. So it does seem like that ability to cover all that space in behind for you know 90 plus minutes is absolutely fundamental to our style of play, and you could argue is more important than some decent ball playing at the back. So I get it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What did you make of the game more generally, Nathan?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good game. I saw some, while we're losing, people get emotional, fine.
Yeah.
I get it. I've been there. I understand it. I don't mind it. But the people who, after full time, are really critical of that performance.
Really? Are there people who have been critical?
Oh, yeah. I've been making the cardinal sin of getting drawn into arguments on Twitter. Yeah, people are really unhappy with that game and our recent games and, Ange as a whole and all sorts of stuff. And I just really don't get it.
I'm so glad I've not been online much this weekend because, I'd have probably been engaged in conversations that I shouldn't have been as well. I thought that was good. At halftime, I thought the goal was coming. Like, we're creating really good chances here. Like, we're not just creating good chances, we're also creating good situations where the chances haven't quite come. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt like if Luton hadn't scored, we could have been running away with it. And I'm surprised to hear that there are people that were overly critical. Second half was fantastic, I thought. There's some really nice football played. And I thought Ange absolutely nailed the subs this time. I'm the most critical about Ange's use of substitutions. I thought he smashed it. I can't have any complaints at all about how he managed the bench.
Agree. All right, so let's talk about let's start with Luton's approach to the game, right? So a couple of things we've talked about recently, a couple of teams and the way they've set up against us recently, I will reference here. So first of all, Brighton, in that Luton looked to man Marcus, often very high up the pitch, including the right centre-back following James Maddison all the way into Maddison's own defensive third, something that we've seen recently. But they also, more interestingly for me, I think tried to repeat the Dycean trick. And what I mean by that, Sean Dyche, by the way, what I mean by that is pushing up very high, but also remaining very passive. Yeah. Following us all the way to the goalkeeper and then just kind of standing there and saying, okay, what are you going to do now? Not committing into challenges, obviously, especially on Bissouma. We'll talk about him later and the specificity of that. But trying to provoke us into fast players without committing players beyond the ball too much. And I said before, Everton and Dyche absolutely nailed that. They really tactically outplayed us in that game. And I think it will be hard for people for other teams to replicate that. And I think that Luton really struggled to replicate those ideas because they left space in behind. They allowed 1v1s on the back line. And so first half, Werner gets a few opportunities to drive into the box, gets shots for himself, creates chances for others. One of the problems with that is that we're not accessing the left side of the pitch very well due to Drew Goosen. Although, again, we were better in this game than we were against Fulham. On the other flank, Kulusevski, who, by the way, was subbed off at halftime with 0.7 expected assists, which is no one did better than that in the team in this game, right? Didn't have a bad game. And I don't think his substitution should be taken as a criticism of his performance. But Kulusevski, obviously, first of all, Ange, there's a quote, right? Do you want to read the quote for us?
Yeah, so our wingers should play the same way. I think Deki was trying to get maybe too involved in the game a little bit. He went looking for the ball. He's that kind of player, wants to be on the ball all the time. I just thought we had a different structure in the second half. It's not about individual players. It's about the overall structure that they have to follow. I thought it was really important, and I could see that Timo was getting two or three really good opportunities, and we weren't getting the same kind of joy on the other side because Deki was coming inside looking for the ball. With Brennan's pace, and he has really good quality delivery and gets in the box, I thought the game was going to be too good for him. I thought the game was going to be good for him.
Okay, yeah. So I think, Ange has done most of my job there for me, right? We were getting in behind in the wings. We were taking advantage out on the left with Werner, but because Kulusevski wants to move in fields, has spoken out recently about his preference of playing in the field, but also has a tendency to move narrow. But more than that, and what Ange doesn't say here is, okay, sometimes he gets the ball down the space and right, and then he checks back and he slows us down. And then because Luton are defending high but passively, then they can get back into their shape. And so it might be, and there is maybe a question, someone asked the question, I don't know if we've included it in the running order. We were asked on Discord, how do we beat Luton's low block, right? And I think it's very understandable to get the impression that Luton were deploying a low block because a lot of the game was spent camped up in their third, both teams camped up in their third, cycling the ball around them. But Luton were pressing out. So it was about when we draw them out, attacking that space fast and not allowing them to settle back into their shape. And Kulusevski, who, again, is a very good player, was just not the right tactical profile for taking advantage of that space fast. He wanted to bring the ball to his feet, wait for someone to make the run on with him, maybe make the pass into midfield anyway, etc., etc. Just wasn't the right profile. Whereas Johnson, he runs in behind and he puts a low cross across the box. And that's exactly what he did. And that's how he won the game.
So we've got loads of questions about Kulusevski. So let's try and tackle some of these now, Bardi. Neil Rutherford said, interesting comments from Ange. Think he's finally realised Deki doesn't fit his system as the right winger. He's good competition for Maddison in the 10 role, though. We need a strong squad for Europe, too. James Robbins said, I'd been thinking this for a while, but this weekend made the possibility more relevant. If we get 50 million for Kulusevski and we can invest it in a more Ange-style two-way right winger, would you? Alternatively, we can get less for Gio, not buy an attacking midfielder, and Deki can be an option there permanently. Deki could be our first 11 high-fee sellable asset in a while. And Aaron Lickstrahl said, in a smaller sense, is Deki someone we should be looking to move on from? I love him dearly, but he clearly is not a fit on the wing. And if Ange doesn't plan on moving him inside, it feels like his style of play will not be best against most of our opponents. And in a larger sense, is it possible to really keep players who don't fit the team identity? We talk about a lot about having depth and having different players for different situations, but does that feel like something easier said than done? Bardi, you've been talking about Kulusevski for a few weeks now.
Yeah, I like Kulusevski. I think he's a great player, but I just don't feel the balance is right. Every time Johnson comes on, especially with Werner out wide, I just feel that has brought more of a balance to the team. There's an equilibrium across it, and both wingers are kind of doing the same thing. I'm not saying Johnson is like the ultimate or the long-term answer, the same with Werner, but I just think we're a better team that way. I think if we can get 50 million for Kulusevski, then you sell him. That's an incredible return. That's double what we paid for him, and that's what we should be doing. We got this player in who was at a really low ebb. He had some great results for us, great performances, and then we flip him for a bit more and invest that money elsewhere. I think that's just a smart move, and I do believe that if he's not the right player for Postecoglou, that's how we do it. But alternatively, if we're going to sell Lo Celso, I think Kulusevski as a backup for Maddison is pretty decent as well. So I would sell Lo Celso or Kulusevski this summer and then spend a nice big bit of money on a winger. But on the Luton thing, it didn't come to me. I just want to have a little say on this. I'm a person who for the last few years has been talking about results are all that matters. And I don't give a shit about a performance. Just give me those 3 points. And I'm very happy with the 3 points. Of course I am, because that's my nature. But I do, there are little alarm bells ringing here, man, that it was good, but it was a bit easy for Luton to score the goal. You're not worried at how easy they just gallivanted down the field, chipped it in the box, and Chong finished. it was worrying. And I got a feel, I'm just concerned that when we play a better team, those chances will happen a bit more often. And the other thing that concerns me is the games we've won recently, and we've won quite a few, has been against teams that have set up perfectly for us. So we've gone out there and the conditions have just worked for us. And we've gone through and we've romped home. We've won those games, Palace, Villa, Luton, Brighton, Brentford, Bournemouth, the rest of them. But all of a sudden, when we come up against a team who's a bit smarter and have got something waiting for us, we've kind of lost or drawn. I'm talking about Wolves and Fulham. Does that not worry you? Are you not at all concerned about this right now?
I would say there have definitely been some things that worried me and some things I think we can tweak and improve on. This game wasn't one of them. The goal, though, but I found very annoying because it was completely preventable. And so I mentioned against post Fulham that one of the things I felt we did really well was when they turned the ball over, they poured forward in numbers. We take a high risk approach with our rest defense. God, I hate the phrase, but shorthand. And we don't leave many players back. We leave three, maybe four players in our defensive third. Suddenly Luton were 3-on-4, I think it was, with Kulusevski actually having lost the ball. So Bissouma is dragged out of position and forced to move wide with Townsend. And we don't essentially have a midfield at that point. Son ball watches. Saar chases back, does the hard work, gets back, and then leaves his man to kind of move towards the ball. And Poro's left with two at the back post, gets blocked off, and the ball comes to Chong. Now, Bissouma makes a massive mistake because he commits, and he shouldn't commit so easily in that situation with Townsend. Townsend's got one trick, and he did his one trick, and he beat Bissouma. And that is like, know your player, Eve. Come on, know what he's going to do. And that is frustrating. But it was a team failure for me. I felt the structure was a problem and has been several times, notably in the Fulham game. But there were lots of sort of defensive instinct failures that Ange will need to work on, I believe. So that goal really did annoy the hell out of me. And it was not dissimilar to some of the other goals we've conceded recently, which, you know, is a pattern and something needs to be addressed, I think.
Okay, yeah. So our defensive structure in possession is pretty reckless, and we are going to concede goals as a result of our very reckless, quote unquote, rest defense this season, next season, the season after. That's always going to be there. I don't think that Ange is interested in changing that. And I think essentially the argument is that is the risk that we take, and the payoff is worth it, is that what it offers in attack is worth what it's undermining us in defence. When we're a better functioning team in attack, we will have less to worry about in defence because the opposition won't even get the ball off us, you know?
And the counter-pressing will improve too. So, you know, we'll be able to quickly win the ball back sometimes.
I don't think the counter-pressing will improve much more than it currently is based on that, because I think that we already have the optimal personnel for that, essentially. We just commit a lot of players ahead of the ball, and that's risky, but it has its rewards. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, do you want to call that a weakness? I think there's an argument to be made that it's a weakness, but it's also just a stylism that is innate to the football that we're going to play. And there exists no football without some level of weakness, right? So yes, when you look at this goal, you can say, oh, this is a rest defense issue. And you can say, look at the Wolves one, same for that. Look at the Fulham one, same for that. It's just a facet of how we play. And yes, it's a tactical weakness. But the idea is that you say, okay, you've identified this weakness. Good luck dealing with the game as a package. And that is how in the long term we will look to develop, rather than being like, oh, okay, let's keep Saar deeper behind the ball when we attack. It's just not going to change.
So the solution then is to improve on the players, or improve the players who are involved in defending those situations, and hope for the best, basically.
No, the solution is
score every time you go forward.
So Kulusevski plays the cutback and it goes behind Saar, and that's how we lose the ball. Just don't lose the ball ever. Just always go. And I'm being facetious there, because that's kind of absurd to expect perfection. The idea is that we win these games 5-1 instead of 2-1.
How do you feel about that, Bardi? Does that does that make you feel any better, or are you still concerned?
It makes me feel a little bit better, but I'm still concerned that we, against more organised teams, we struggle. The Fulham game is resting heavy on me, man. I don't know, but it's on my shoulder and it's weighing me down, that Fulham and the Wolves game. Two teams that have, especially the Wolves one, a pretty smart manager who has got good counter-attacking players, and they kind of manhandled us, and the Fulham one as well. So I feel a little bit better, but I'm still worried about those two matches.
I want to come back to the Kulusevski discussion because both the question and Bardi piqued my interest, because you know I have a radical position on selling players at every opportunity. Yeah, man, if we get offered 50 million for Kulusevski, we should sell him, because that's a significant overpay. Yeah, simple as that. But contrary to that, I want to say that in this game, for example, in the Luton game, for example, we were playing against a team who were pushing up and leaving space in behind, and we were playing with Sun up top, which meant that if we camped up in their third, which occasionally we did in the first half, and tried to cross the ball in, we're crossing the ball into Sun and Madison, occasionally Saar, right? Saar arriving late for more of a cutback than a cross, despite his physique. So that's not a viable path to go. Whereas in another game, Wolves, if we're playing Richarlison up front, I probably prefer Kulusevski to Johnson in that situation, because where's Johnson going to run off the ball to? There's no space, whereas Kulusevski can deliver well from out wide. So it's horses for courses. Kulusevski had a really good performance against Villa. Was it Villa game, right?
Yeah.
And that was the game in which Villa sat deeper. So it's a matter of a profile for the match again, rather than a critique of Kulusevski. That said, I have struggled with Kulusevski on the wing in general this season, despite very good performances sprinkled here and there, just because his lack of pace is a point of frustration. I think, yeah, I don't mind the idea of saying, okay, going forward, we want to see Kulusevski more as a midfielder than a wide player. And that's bad news for Gio, because that makes him third choice and therefore surplus. But, you know, we can't rely on him to be fit. It's not really, like, in terms of quality, I think Lo Celso is every bit as good as Kulusevski. I really do. But in terms of availability, readiness, you just can't rely on him. So yeah, if we get offered 50 million for Kulusevski, I'd sell Kulusevski. But assuming that we don't, assuming that the offer for Kulusevski is more like 30, I would be looking for a sale of Lo Celso instead.
Yeah, I think Lo Celso is way higher than Kulusevski on my list of players to sell, not least because of his injury history. He's less versatile, I think, in the system. He, I'm sure, will be wanting to play every week, so we'll be looking to engineer a move anyway. I can see Kulusevski moving on within a couple of seasons, but to me, he's great to keep around now because of his versatility, because he can be multifunctional and cover different roles. I mean, I'm thinking even for the West Ham game, where I will expect us to be playing a team who will defend deeper, who will be who will see us camped in their half a lot more, but with them defending their box. I think Kulusevski's ideal for that, either centrally or wide, and I think he'll be a useful asset in that game and others of its type. Also with his age, I mean, there's no rush to sell him because he'll hold value for another couple of years. But let's talk about Johnson, who obviously made a massive difference in this particular game. I've liked Johnson since before we signed him. I felt like we overpaid a bit for Brennan Johnson, but I am a big fan, and you cannot argue with his output. It's been really, really impressive, and he delivered the goods again with a fantastic second half performance. Buddy, you're a fan as well.
Yeah, get wide and whip it. Just keep whipping it across the box. That's what he does. He does it well. As many assists this season as Madison. I like him, man. Boy runs forward fast. There we go. Good. And occasionally he dribbles as well. So he ticks my boxes, man.
He's young. He's British.
And I do. There's a bit of a spirit about him as well. There's a bit of like enthusiasm about him, and I like that. And if you've got to be a winger, be a winger. Hug that touchline, untuck your shirt, and just go for it. That's the Tottenham way. So there is a bit of a hark back to glory days with him, which I quite like. And we need to talk about Werner as well, because I once described Werner as the most brilliant rubbish footballer ever, and he's still doing it, because he got that ball and he absolutely destroyed that fullback, and then he just whacked it wide,
and then he passed it off for Doggett.
So I don't know where I sit with him. I think we are a much better team when he's wide. I think he's a better wide man than Sonny or Richarlison. And I really like how he plays. I really like he moves like Maradona, but plays football like Madonna. I really like how he does things. But the boy needs to practice his shooting, because there's a reason why he's at Spurs, because he can't score goals.
Yeah.
So I love the Mighty Ducks. It's perhaps one of the greatest trilogy of films that there ever is. And there's one of these ice hockey players who just is super fast, but then arrives in front of the goal and can't score. Mendoza, and he can't put the ball in. He can't actually hit the puck into the net. And that is Timo Werner. Timo Werner is Mendoza.
He's so good right up until he isn't. You know.
Yeah.
He was tremendous. He was absolutely tremendous against Luton, and also clearly can't hit a bundle to save his life.
Yeah.
I'm of the belief that it genuinely doesn't matter at this point. I think he adds so much to our, like Bardi says, to our team. We look a better side of him in it. I think his levels, as proper football men would say, are there for all to see. Like, he is unrelenting in his driving at the fullback. His pressing is very good as well. I've been really pleasantly surprised by his pressing. He's very reliable with back to goal when he receives it on the wing. You know, you don't often see him turn the ball over in dangerous areas. I don't recall it happening once since he's come to Spurs. His output is phenomenal when you look at expected goals and assists per 90. It's just that he is missing some big chances for sure, including this one. For me, it's the most obvious signing to make this summer. Like, why would you not sign him for, what is it, 14 million euros, something like that? And it's just, get it done.
Absolutely.
It's all fun and games now until the finishing really hurts us. And then it's just like, Jesus! But I admit, it's fun and games now while things are going on, but we're in a title challenge and Timo Werner's at Anfield, like Moussa Sissoko threw on goal, then it's not so funny. But while it's funny, I'm all on board.
Yeah, but even if he misses that 1v1, the next minute he'll be skinning the fullback and putting one on the plate for Johnson at the back post, so it's fine.
If our only golden opportunity in a game falls to Werner, the problem is that we didn't create enough golden opportunities.
True.
Yeah.
So would Nathan be doing a bet next season that Timo Werner's going to score 15 goals?
No, not goals, but we could do assists. Also, it's getting fucking tight for Richie. I don't know who's going to start.
Nine games left.
He's fit again now, Nathan.
He's fit to play, but is he going to get many minutes off the Sun now? The Sun's not going to move back out wide. He's not going to get minutes off of Werner, you know?
All these idiots coming after me. All these idiots on Discord, on Twitter. Get your money out, bud. Get your money out. Where are you now? Mentions are quiet. Yeah, it all piped down. It's a problem. Problem with you lot is I make predictions that for a whole season, or maybe even for 10 seasons, and eventually I'm correct. Everyone here, they all make decisions based on 2 weeks. I know bull.
Harry TS says, is the goal line tech fucked up and the balls over the line discourse on Twitter the most embarrassed you've been by our football Twitter following? Oh my God, I found the whole discussion extremely tiresome.
It did mess it up for that Villa goal a couple of seasons back, right? So it's not totally beyond possibility. So the roller coaster of emotions I went through were, I watched the game, thought it was a goal, saw that the referee didn't give it. I went, oh, okay, that's not a goal, and then moved on with my life and went back to watching the game. And then I saw some screenshots on Twitter, and they're like really low-quality, grainy ones from suspicious angles. Someone's taken a photo of their TV from across the room with their phone and cropped out, you know, the family portrait. And I've gone, that doesn't really, it's not very definitive. It looks like it might be in. So I was like, okay, when I do my rewatch of the match for analysis purposes, I'll also pay special attention to the replays. And I watched the replays and I thought, wow, there's a couple of replays here where it really looks like it's all the way over the line. And I took my screenshots of them because I was like, oh, okay, maybe there is an error here. And then finally, there's a broadcast replay where it's properly on the line and you can see, and they fade from the broadcast replay into the technology broadcast. And I took a screenshot as they merge between the two, and you can clearly see, okay, yeah, that ball is still on the line by a millimeter, and that's it. I tweeted out that screenshot if you're curious to see it. But I don't know.
Every good conspiracy, there is a moment of truth in there. So those people that were watching the game in the UK or abroad in live action, the ball went in or out, but it went on the line close enough, and the referee didn't get, as he always does, he looks at his arm just so everyone knows, I haven't been buzzed, carry on. So normally you get the replay immediately after, but it was the delay. In real time, we went 6, 7, 8 minutes. All of a sudden, someone thought maybe the goal line tech guy was on the loo or checking his phone or something. And the longer that time went on, the more the conspiracy theory started to come out. And that's where this has happened. I don't think it's the most embarrassing our fan base have ever been, but there was a moment of doubt there. And the fact that we didn't see the instant Hawkeye, that just encouraged the rumours. That's my opinion on it.
Yeah, it was a real close one. It's annoying because it's the closest I've ever seen, I think. But it's one of those things. And I do have to say I trust the technology on this one. I think it's reasonable to do so, having seen them get every decision right except that one. Doughty did really well, actually, to cover around and get it off a line. Like, that looked like an impossible. And it's a good save from Kaminsky as well. But yeah, like, one of those things.
I did wonder about your boy Doughty. I didn't know whether to bring this up because you're my friend, Windy. But your guy, you like him a lot. How do you feel about him now after Brendan Johnson ended him?
Well, the thing with Doughty and the thing I'm sceptical about is his physicality. I think the guy has got immense stamina, but he is slow on the turn and will potentially get burned every now and again by a fast winger. The thing is, his quality on the ball, I believe, makes up for it. I really like him.
I'm just greying out his name on my list as we speak.
Yeah.
You got off him, Nathan.
Yeah. Well, he was only on there, you know, as a to watch. And now you're saying that he's slow on the turn. Yeah. Lacks physical intensity. That's not the profile.
The difference between him and Udogie is significant. Mm. The difference between him and Porro is less significant.
Yeah, I think I would rather have 3 Udogies and 1 Porro than 3 Porros and 1 Udogie, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, ideally you have 2 of each though, right?
Yeah, but maybe.
Let's get a mix of skills. And Doughty, great set piece specialist like Porro, great passer like Porro, creative like Porro. Doesn't have the same defensive ability as Udogie. Like, he's not a dual monster. Yeah, maybe that can be improved upon. Maybe with some physical refinement that can be improved upon. But yeah, I think he struggles for pace sometimes.
He's just a bit Sunday League as well.
What makes you say that? Is it the name?
just the look of him. You know, I'm all about how a player looks and moves around the pitch. He's just a bit... Yeah, he's just a bit Sunday League. Like, if you get most of our players and you just chuck them into a Sunday League, they don't look like... You could tell they just don't belong there. But he does, unfortunately, which I think ticks him off my list. I like my players to look a certain way.
Finally, on this game, before we move on, Shep says, is Bissouma press resistant?
Yes.
Interested to get your thoughts on Bissouma. Okay, here's where I am with Bissouma. Bissouma started the season as a genuine 9 out of 10 player. He was incredible for the first few matches and led to me making the prediction that he'd be our player of the season. And I thought he was amazing and kind of our linchpin and making the system work, holding it together, keeping us tight defensively. And then he made some bad decisions and he was suspended, injured, suspended again. His performance levels when he came back were not what they were. I think he's been overstated how bad he was. I don't think he's been terrible. I think he's been okay. But the drop-off from the start of the season is undeniably significant. There was a moment against Luton where Bissouma went on one of his dribbles into the penalty area and I thought, I think Basuma's just got his mojo back. And I think I'm now believing that this is a confidence issue. I think that the yellow cards, the red cards, have dented his confidence. And if he can get that back, then I think we'll see the Basuma from the start of the season again. Really like him. I think he's perfectly press resistant personally. And there's clearly defensive work to do. You know, the way he was beaten by Andros Townsend was too easy, too basic. But it's a difficult position to play in Ange Ball. And if you want a player that can pass more, you're probably going to end up with a player who's defensively worse than Basuma, less press resistant than Basuma. If you want a player that can defend more, you're going to end up with someone like Onana, who I think will end up at Man U personally, but I personally think is less, less able with the ball than Basuma, much better defensively, much less able in my opinion in possession. So there's trade-offs, and it kind of comes down to what profile you're looking for. But for me, I think Basuma is a good compromise in a number of those areas and will presumably be our starting six next year.
I disagree. I think Basuma is fantastic. I think he was brilliant against Luton. I think that there's a general misread on his use in the team now. And I talked about this a bit last week, although that was under the lens of criticism because I wanted us to change how we were approaching a game in which we weren't accessing the left side of the pitch because of us playing a second choice centre back on the left. Every team we play against since going back to November, before that, every team we play against is paying special attention to Basuma. Mm-hmm. There's two things that every team makes sure to do. One, never challenge him. Don't ever try. Don't even bother trying to tackle him. Question is Basuma press resistant? Yes. Yes, Basuma is press resistant. Do not try to take the ball off Basuma because you won't get it and you'll just open up space behind you. But two, always apply pressure to Basuma. Always make him feel your presence. Never let him turn. Always be there to stop him from turning. And so what teams are doing is they're forcing Basuma to play the ball backwards the way it came. They're not giving Basuma the opportunity to go around them. And this is fine because what this is doing is it's occupying one, often two players in the opposition's press, right? And that's opening space either side of him. That's opening space up for each centre-back. That's opening space around him. Combine these bits of information here, right? Spurs play with a number six who is extremely press-resistant on the ball. And two, all of Spurs' best plays come from fast back-to-front football. In the Luton game, we scored all our goals starting with the ball at the feet of the goalkeeper or the centre-back, right? Because of the way teams have to worry about Basuma, we're finding ways around midfield, through midfield, over midfield, and into the space in behind. I have so little concern about Basuma. I think he's playing brilliantly. The stats still hold up extremely well. The difference between now and the start of the season is that he's less present in the game. He's less visually obvious. He's having less big special moments. But what he's achieving for us simply by receiving the ball and passing it to the other centre-back incredibly securely and being a threat that the opposition have to worry about is opening up the rest of the pitch. I'm really happy with the way that Basuma's playing and with the way that we're playing as a team with Basuma in it. Okay, against a low block, he's not expressive enough with his passing. He's not dynamic enough with his passing. He doesn't open up anything there. He just keeps it safe. You can say there are better players in that situation. But for the way that we play back to front, I think he's outstanding and I'm super happy with him. And I suspect Ange feels fairly similarly.
Well, Ange did make a comment about his slight drop off.
Go on.
I think. I could be wrong. I'm way more in agreement with you than a lot of people I know would be. But I do think you're overlooking some subtle changes to his game. And I appreciate where you're coming from in terms of it's the opposition doing these things which are making life difficult or more difficult for him. But like things like the way he was punching passes earlier in the season, like I felt that came with an air of confidence. Like he's stroking the ball differently. And that, I believe, has changed. I'm interested to see what happens over the next couple of games because, like I say, that sort of run into the box, it looked like Basuma from earlier in the season. And it could be that the style of game just allowed that to happen because we were camped. But I don't know, I've not seen him make a run like that into the box for weeks. And I don't think that's coincidence. I think it is his confidence returning, personally. It'll be interesting to hear from Basuma at some point. So it'd be interesting to hear someone actually ask him, you know, how he feels his season's gone, because I don't think that's happened. Bardi, where are you?
I'm not entirely sold on his recent performances. He started the season incredible, and I was on that hype train as well. I feel my eye test is there's been a distinct drop-off from him, and I would like to see a little bit more from him. I'd like to see him gain that kind of pizzazz that he had early on. So I think I have question marks on him, and I would even go so far as to perhaps ponder another number six coming into work instead of him, or as an alternative to him.
And if that were to be, what kind of style six would you be wanting us to sign?
Quick, good, incisive passer. And yeah, a quick, good, incisive passer.
So priority on the on-ball stuff rather than the off-ball stuff?
I think so. The amount of teams now that we play against that low block us, I think we need that. And then if we've got Basuma, then you can kind of swap in between the two. But I do think right now we need to prioritise a better passer. A better passer, someone who moves the ball forward better.
So there's some suggestion that I think Annie Gold reported that we'll be looking at number sixes in the summer. But I suspect that those will be a young understudy rather than someone to displace or even compete directly with Basuma. I suspect that says more about Bentancur's performance in the sixth role than it does about Basuma's, and that we now see Bentancur as almost exclusively a number eight.
I think so.
Which brings me back to where I was back before and wanting Redondo, who's now in America.
I agree totally with that. I think Bentancur's performances while Basuma was out weren't good enough. Even, there might be mitigating circumstances, but I don't think we saw anything there.
They were.
I think injury, but I don't think he's done enough. I think him and Saar in that role is really nice. And I think a young alternative to Basuma would be where I would go as well. Redondo's gone to America, though. What happened there?
Yeah, he's in MLS. He's playing with Messi. He's understudying Busquets, as was the foretold circle of life.
Fair enough.
I've found the Ange quote on Basuma. He says, like everyone else and like us as a club, he hasn't really hit the consistent levels he'd want to, but that's okay. That's where we're at. That's where he's at. That's where a lot of the group were at. The challenge is to fight through that and make sure you come out the other side stronger and more consistent. So he's basically saying that his own form is representative of our form as a club. He talks also about the disruption that the suspension had on him and how difficult it is to maintain levels when you're so disrupted, which is completely reasonable. Let's end on this one from Matt DeWild, who says, listening to your discussion about team goals, cutbacks and screamers, it made me think that I can't remember the last time that Son even tried to curl one from outside the box. Generally, I agree with you and Nathan about a great team goal, but there's something beautiful about Son's curlers, and I'm curious to hear where you think they've gone. Ange doesn't want those shots, or the system just doesn't create them?
It's a good timing for this question, because there was a moment against Luton where he was lined up in that left pocket and I thought, oh, he's going to shoot. And I, even in that moment, had that thought about our discussion on screamers and thinking, but actually I always want Son to shoot in those positions. And then he didn't. Then he reshaped his body for the pass. And I thought, that's interesting. Because I also remember I was in the stands for the Brighton game at home last season, and I was angled so I was facing the goal with Son between us. And the moment he got it out from his feet, I was like, well, that's a goal. And it was that very much that position, very much that situation. And then he reshaped his body because he didn't want to go for the shot there. And yeah, I think as much as I'm a box shots radicalist, Son should be shooting when he has that space, because he's a special, special player. He's one of the most special players in terms of long shooting in the history of the game. But I feel like because he's not been doing that this season, because he's not been in that space this season, because he's been playing either centre forwards and getting into the 6-yard box, or he's been more of a provider out wide on the touchline when he's played on the wing, he's not been in that channel where he can shoot like no one else can. And so he's out of practice, and he's not in that same bit of confidence. You know, it's a bit alien to him now because he's not been doing it. We've lost that part of Son's game at the moment. And he does a lot of other things for us that he hasn't done before. And I'm really appreciative of that. But it is a shame to miss those Son long shots for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's also the same with Maddison. Maddison used to ping it all the time for Leicester. Mm-hmm. And that's something I would like to see more from him at Spurs. But he seems reluctant just to whack one as well.
Yeah, I mean, I keep wondering with Son. I mean, obviously, yeah, I completely agree with Nathan's analysis that the position change has had an impact on his ability to cut it and curl it. But I wonder also if it's a slight mentality change now he's got the armband. Like, he feels he has to be more responsible and do things that are better for the team rather than just for himself. Even though, ironically, probably the best thing for the team would be for him to twat one in from 30 yards. But I just wonder whether that has had an impact as well. Maybe those two things combined. And then, like you say, because he's not doing it so regularly and not having the opportunity so regularly, he's out of practice. Interested. So there's not much point in us talking about the West Ham game now because this is Monday. The West Ham game is on Tuesday. We hope to record post-West Ham. I'm very interested to see what the front three selection will be for the West Ham game because we face a very different test. And I think there's an argument to play Son, Richarlison, Kulusevski against West Ham.
Son out wide.
Mm.
You would rest Werner.
Sounds mad, I know, because he's been so good. But yeah, I think if, like, rotate is the word, okay, I would use rather than rest. But yeah. And then next game, back in with Werner, Son, Johnson.
I do... As much as I need Richarlison to get four more goals for the end of the season, I do think the West Ham game will be one for Richarlison in terms of there won't be space behind for Son to run into. Mm-hmm. Instead, we need something closer to a battering ram. And therefore also, probably Kulusevski out wide for reasons discussed earlier. Don't know about Son over Werner on the left at the moment, though.
So we just bench Son.
I prefer rotate.
It's not going to happen, is it? It's not going to happen. And he's not going to...
So then you start with Son and you bring Richarlison on at 60
That's
minutes,
it, isn't
right?
It? Yeah. That's it. That's what he'll do.
Also, it's five goals.
Yeah. Score, buddy.
It's five goals, Nathan. It's not four. He needs to score 4.5.
I'm pretty sure it's four.
What was... No, it was five.
He's on 11. League Cup. He needs over 14.5, so he needs 15 goals, and he's got one in the League Cup, so he's on 11. He needs four.
That League Cup goal is going to come back to haunt me. But for West Ham, I would go Werner, Sonny, and Kulusevski. Even though, but I just think it would be his type of game. But then bring on Johnson after 45 minutes.
Mm. Yeah, this is the first sort of little glut of games we've seen for a while when we've had like the front three options. So it'll be very intriguing to see how he utilises them. I mean, there's even a shout that Kulusevski plays inside and like he rests Madison or Sarr, rotates Madison or Sarr. So someone mentioned on the Discord that Madison went straight down the tunnel and seemed unhappy.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't see that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Does he not like coming off of Lo Celso? Did he want to be involved?
I think that was the suggestion that he was unhappy about being brought off, or maybe he's unhappy with his performance. How did you feel about Maddison?
Oh yeah, same. He's come under some criticism, but I'm very, very happy with him. I think he's a fantastic player. At the moment, we aren't getting the ball up the left side of the pitch as much as I'd like due to the centre back. But yeah, I don't understand criticism of Maddison or calls for him to be benched for Kulusevski or Lo Celso because I think he's the best of the three, and it's no more complicated than that. And he's not going to score and assist every single game, and that's okay.
Vardy, any thoughts?
I'm a bit down on Maddison. I don't think he's been right since his injury, so I would like to see his game time managed and alternatives used, Lo Celso or Kulusevski in that role.
Mm. Yeah, and I think this is the thing, because we've got such good options on the bench now. Our bench is stacked, by the way. But since we have those options, why not make use of them and, like you say, manage the game time a bit more, which I thought Ange did really, really effectively against Luton. I thought all of the players who came on had a positive impact. Bentancur looked sprightly, which was nice to see. And then Richarlison, Højbjerg, and obviously Johnson and Lo Celso all did well off the bench as well. It was a pleasure to see him use the full bench for a change.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Vardy, and our tactics guy, Nathan Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Trayton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the X-Subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs. Thank you.